Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined for the very first time by Stelios.
Hello, thank you for the invitation.
That's okay, you're definitely the right person for this Contemplations because of course we're talking about morality and you have a PhD in philosophy and although I have studied some philosophy to a master's level, it was mainly focused on the philosophy of truth and things like that because it was science focused. So
I'm really looking forward to our discussion.
Well, it's going to be a good one because I've done a lot of research here. So why am I actually focusing on morality in the first place? I mean, most people consider themselves moral, don't they? What's so important about understanding it? Well, understanding the nature of morality is very important if you want to be as moral as possible. So there are lots of different perspectives on morality and lots of them might lead you to different conclusions. So if you want to take seriously the route towards being as moral as possible, then you've got to understand which perspective you agree with to understand which moral perspective you want to head towards, I suppose, is a way of putting it. Do you agree with that as the main charge of looking at morality from a more practical standpoint?
Yes, I do agree. And this is something that has taken place in virtually every society. Mm-hmm. We have people asking themselves, what is the right thing to do? What is the value in life? What are the values that we should pursue? What kind of person should I be? Mm-hmm. So we have people asking themselves these questions ever since recorded history.
Yes, and just because we haven't got any conclusive answers doesn't mean it's worthwhile not to ask the question. I think it's an important exercise, even if you don't necessarily have complete concrete answers, because you still can move closer towards what seems to be a better outcome.
This seems right. And it seems to me that even if you don't find answers that will convince everyone else, mm-hmm. this doesn't mean that they're not good answers.
Yes.
Because sometimes, you know, you could spend your whole life researching a field mm-hmm. and have a very informed judgment about that field. And many people would disagree with it. Think of Galileo's case.
Mm-hmm. Of
okay,
course.
So the fact that many people did not agree with Galileo does not imply that Galileo was wrong. So I think that if we look at the value of personal contemplation, mm-hmm. and in this case, an ethical contemplation, it's enough.
Absolutely. And it's also worthwhile in understanding differing perspective, I suppose you can put it, because there are lots of competing perspectives on morality. And I think that if you are to push your view successfully, you need to understand your competition, right? And that will certainly be addressed here. So first and foremost, I suppose it's worth defining, well, what is morality in the first place? And what seems to be the most colloquial definition, to me at least, is this one from the Oxford English Dictionary, which simply is morality are principles concerning the distinction between right and wrong or good and bad behavior. I think that most people would say yes. I mean, that's not really too controversial. And I think that, yeah, that's what we mean when we use the term morality, isn't it? But there is a problem here in that baked within this definition of morality are some very subjective terms, right and wrong, good and bad. And if we're actually trying to measure morality, well, we might need a slightly different definition. And this came to me more as a scientist in that, well, you want to define your terms in an operational way so that they're measurable. So I've come up with a few other definitions that are a bit easier to measure. For example, what is moral is what promotes social harmony, or morality is the optimal strategy for the maintenance of interpersonal relationships. And these are things that are tangible and we can quantify and therefore measure experimentally, even though they're somewhat in keeping with what morality is. So these are some alternative definitions that might be useful, although this hasn't really been addressed to my satisfaction in the psychological literature in the same way that it has in the philosophical one, in that there are lots of debates still about the definition of what morality is. And I think that the latter definition is very useful from a practical standpoint, even though colloquially people mean the former one, good, bad, right and wrong, that one. And I think that these two or three definitions could coexist with one another perfectly fine, but sorry.
No, I think you're thinking it in the right way. Mm-hmm. And I will do a classic philosophical move now and disagree with the definition of the Oxford Dictionary, because this seems to be more like metaethics. Mm-hmm. The idea of study of rightness and wrongness and goodness and badness. Yes, this is more metaethical. It's like, what is rightness? What is wrongness? What is goodness? What is badness? But the question is that when it comes to morality, we are trying to apply those notions in the real world and in concrete situations. And so, for instance, we don't have questions like what is good, but also questions like what is good in life?
Yeah.
And have you watched Conan the Barbarian?
I know of it.
Yeah, you remember
the Arnold Schwarzenegger
this
one.
Is the quote where they ask him, Conan, what is best in life? And he says, to crush your enemies, see them driven before you and hear the lamentation of their women. This is an ethical answer.
Okay.
It's not a metaethical one. It just says, this is not just what goodness is in an abstract sense. It's what is good in life.
Yeah, so it's applied rather than in the abstract.
Yeah.
Where if you ask the question, well, what is good, then you're asking to define goodness in itself rather than how it manifests in the world.
Now, I don't know if Conan the Barbarian is the best moral leader out there, but this, I think this illustrates the distinction between saying on the one hand that we study moral distinctions and their meaning, and on the other hand, we try to see which actions are right or wrong in concrete circumstances in which human beings are placed.
I think it's always better to lean towards the specific circumstances because this is something that's true in many areas, and I'm going to talk about it in the domain of decision making because that's my research expertise. So in decision making, the best way to make your decisions is that you try and identify all of the relevant factors and how important they are in swaying the decision. And I think that ultimately, if you're applying that same framework to morality, you want to identify the factors that contribute to a certain situation and therefore the consequences of your moral action. And I think that through identifying those factors, it helps you to make that sort of decision.
I think so. And this is also relevant to moral deliberation. Mm-hmm. Because there's this idea that when we are trying to assess a situation and we try to find out what it is that we should do, we are weighing reasons for and against some actions. Mm. So what you're saying makes perfect sense.
Thank you.
I don't think that the fact that you're viewing it from a psychological perspective is a deficiency here. It's as you said, human decision making and the idea that we are weighing reasons.
Yes. I mean, of course, feeding into that when it is decision-making just purely on its own, not even adding morality, there are obviously two different means by which you can make decisions. You can either do it consciously or unconsciously, and the unconscious mind tends to deal more with the emotional side of things, which certainly influences us more so with morality, because when it comes to our unconscious mind, it's more more sort of rule-based or heuristic-based. It's more quick and unconscious. It's more prone to making logical mistakes.
Yeah.
So that's something to bear in mind when it comes to morality, is that you're predisposed, because it's an inherently emotional domain, to make decisions in that way, which might not necessarily be desirable. You might want to look at what both your intuitions and your more abstract reasoning or your more conscious decision-making pathways implore you to go towards.
If I may, I think here may be a very interesting difference between psychological literature on decision-making and philosophical one. It seems to me that many philosophers would say that decision is something that we make consciously. And when it comes to unconscious urges or whatever processing, we shouldn't call it decision. I'm just adding this to the mix.
Sure. And I mean, ultimately, the distinction between the two is very difficult because it's not entirely clear whether you use entirely one or the other, or you use a combination of both to come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
So the distinction is mainly conceptual in nature, just to make clear which role one or the other takes. But of course, it would... You don't consciously feel emotions. You don't say, I want to feel happy, and then it appears. but it's always a present thing, and that's your unconscious mind. But that, of course, even when you're consciously making a decision, you still consult your feelings, don't you? It's pretty impossible to make a decision completely emotionlessly.
And many times decision making arises in cases where we do have strong sentiments, mm-hmm. and we are trying to weigh reasons whether we should act on those mm-hmm. sentiments or not. So definitely, sentiments and desires are key into decision making,
mm-hmm. and very important for morality as well. So, moving on to arguments that morality is objective, and this is, I'm going to say it right off the bat, I believe that there is an objective form of morality. I'm going to talk a bit more about that later on, but just so I'm being completely transparent when I'm presenting this, I do have a bias, as everyone does with everything, but still, it's good manners to bring it up. But the first argument that I want to bring up that morality is objective is, of course, the cross-cultural similarities between certain moral norms. So, for example, it's wrong to murder, torture, and steal from innocent people. I don't think I can name a culture where those moral norms are not enforced, except maybe Somalia, in which case it's encouraged to do the opposite. But still, that's the exception does not define the rule.
I think so, and it is important to look at it in another way, that what kind, any society without those moral norms would disintegrate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If, for instance, a society did not have law enforcement in mm-hmm. any way, if we had talked about anarchy, there would be no society.
Well, even anarchists believe that there'd be some form of law enforcement. It would just be more bottom up. But political stuff aside,
it depends on the
on
form
the
of anarchism, of course. Yeah. It's, yeah.
But yes, this seems to suggest, because generally speaking, if you're looking at it from an evolutionary psychology perspective, if you can find, or just purely biological one as well, if you can find commonalities between lots of different cultures in the world, it seems to suggest that something is innate, that it's biological, that it's programmed into you rather than it being cultural. Because if it's cultural, there tends to be a bit more variance, which leads us to look at things that do vary between cultures.
Yes.
Of course, there is still space for there to be some variance. I'm not necessarily claiming that all moral systems are entirely objective, but there is certainly an objective component, because there are commonalities between societies that are undeniable, that we, to have a society in the first place, I think you have to abide by these moral norms. Otherwise, your society collapses. But there's still space for variability. So I'm just trying to think of something like covering your hair. In Islamic countries, if you're a woman, is a moral prescriptive as well as a law, but it's seen as moral first and foremost, isn't it? That's what informs the law in the first place. Whereas in Britain, it's neither here nor there. We don't really mind either way whether you do that. In fact, generally speaking, a head covering is a little bit frowned upon out of a context, because you can use it to conceal your identity potentially and steal. That's why you can't put your hoodie up if you're going into a supermarket or something, and they tell you off for it. It's because it's harder to tell who you are, whereas the norms are completely flipped for Islamic countries. So it does suggest that there is variability, even though hurting innocent people in those ways in which I listed is clearly something that is an objective aspect of all cultures.
There is an interesting discussion going on, and I think it's been going on for centuries here, and it has to do precisely with similarities and dissimilarities across culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some people who are going to say, especially when they come into contact with different cultures and they look at their different customs, they frequently say that, well, no, this is how we do it and this is how they do it. There's no common morality,
mm-hmm.
and because there are no common conventions. And interestingly, the response to them by objectivists involves the following attempt. The attempt to have a theory that explains why there are some dissimilarities between cultures, but without those dissimilarities negating the fact that similarities exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thing to bring into the discussion. And one of my favorite theories of the sort is Adam Smith's.
Of course.
And if I may elaborate a bit. Yeah. Adam Smith had this theory where he said the two fundamental virtues are self-control and benevolence. And he said that people in all countries and all cultures throughout history respect self-control and benevolence. But he says there's a difference which accounts for the difference we see in customs in societies mm-hmm. across history. And the difference is the following, that in underdeveloped countries, the virtue of self-control is more required and demanded of people. Mm-hmm. Whereas in developing countries, the more countries develop, the more they forget self-control and focus on benevolence.
Yes, and I imagine that's because it's akin to that principle that necessity begets innovation. And the innovation here is in the way you conduct yourself. And if you've got natural pressures making you be self-disciplined in that, you know, if you don't work 10 hours a day, you can't feed your family. Well, there's not really any wiggle room there. You've got to be self-disciplined to be able to do that. Whereas if you're living more comfortably, then you can be a bit more lax. That's
exactly
what I'm imagining here.
And he gives also a very interesting example that he, I don't know whether his anthropology was correct or not, but he said that in society of Indians, Indians were preparing some chants or curses to direct towards their enemies in the case that they were being burned at the stake. So the whole idea, they were being bred with the idea that if someone burns you at the stake, at that time, you have to show self-control and deliver those words. That's, you know, one of the, where he says, but
that's quite an extreme example.
It is a very extreme example, but he would also add that this does not imply that in the society of Indians, there was no focus on benevolence. Mm. So what he would say to relativists who say there are so many dissimilarities across societies, and that means that we shouldn't talk about a common objective morality, he would say, no, there are commonalities, and where there are dissimilarities, we can explain them. Mm. And this is a core part of his theory of moral sentiments and his economics.
It seems very difficult to deny that that's true though, right? Because of course there are, and of course you're going to have different moral situations when you have entirely different scenarios. So for example, the penalty for, I think, stealing sheep and horses and cows in medieval Britain, I believe, at one point was death. And people say, well, that's really extreme. What's a person's life for someone's livestock? And then you realize that, well, actually they're reliant on their livestock to live. So by stealing from them that livestock, you're condemning potentially them and their entire family to die for your own personal gain. So in the context of that, well, okay, that starts to make sense and it doesn't seem quite as extreme. So I think that viewing things in the moral context in which they occur is very important.
And this is why objectivism is supposed to be the commonsensical view. Mm-hmm.
It certainly is, in my opinion. I mean, I don't think many people have questioned whether morality is something that exists. I think it's something that people entertain, but even if you believe it's not, quite often it's very, very difficult to live as if it's not a real thing.
Yes, I agree.
So moving on to another reason why I believe objective morality exists is that morality is an aspect of human psychology, and human thoughts are produced by identifiable physical structures in the brain. So this is a bit bit pedantic and technical, but objectively speaking, you can point to a part of the brain and say that's where that perception of morality exists. I mean, we're still obviously figuring it out. We haven't got it down to a science whereby they can say, okay, this neural network is what produces this specific moral perspective and this one does this. We haven't got to that point yet. I mean, psychology is still a relatively young science, but these things do have a physical basis, a material basis in the world. The human brain is still a part of the world. So when people say, well, what is morality? It's got no properties. Well, it does have properties. It's just up here. Just because it's difficult to measure doesn't mean it doesn't exist, though. So another perspective on this is that morality as we know it is centered around the promotion of human well-being, and immorality produces suffering and pain. And all of these things are measurable biological phenomena and therefore objective. I think that morality does focus on, you know, promoting human well-being over human suffering, and we can measure human suffering. It's, I mean, we don't have to do that. You don't have to be an empiricist to know someone's suffering, because it's so programmed into us to recognize emotions in other people. You can see if someone's in pain almost immediately by looking at their facial expression. So our psychology has us predisposed towards looking at the well-being of other people. And I think that if human beings aren't moral animals, why would they go to such great lengths to care about one another in the first place?
Yes, I agree with you. And it seems to me that one of our paradigmatic notions of immorality is dehumanization.
Mm.
So when we have to talk about human nature, when we talk about morality and what is the right or wrong thing to do to human beings.
Yes.
And as you, to add to what you were saying before, of course, the way we have evolved has led us to have the nature that we do have.
Yes.
And obviously, when we talk about dehumanization, it is, we are implying that there is something that is contrary to human nature.
Mm.
So, of course, evolution plays a part. And of course, the kinds of beings we are determine to a very large extent what it is right or wrong thing to do to human beings. And again, it's very interesting that you mentioned sentiment and the moral sentiments, because this is also part of our nature, which is a bit more complex. We could say that human beings are a bit, we are more complex than other animals. And we can accept on the one hand that some animals can feel pain just like we do and that they can suffer. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to start seeing animals as having the emotions, the complex emotions that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So again, when we are talking about morality, we definitely have to have a picture of the beings that we are talking about in mind. And evolution does play a part in it.
Absolutely.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.